is, by the way. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian William and Misha coming to you live every day, and my soul just gets better every time we start the show, I might add, from the stylings of whoever pops up in front of us. So, good stuff. Let's get to our guests as quickly as possible. Speaking of stylings, Sarah White, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Hey, guys. I always love coming out and seeing you virtually.
Of course, and welcome back. It's been a little while, so if you would introduce yourself to our millions of listeners, and then we'll roll into what's top of mind for you.
Excellent. Well, I am Sarah White. On Twitter, I'm So Sarah, and I am the CEO of a market strategy analyst firm focused on talent acquisition, talent management. And I also run HRTechBlog.com.
Nice.
That's it.
What's keeping you up at night, or what's top of mind for you these days, Sarah?
Work-related?
let's start there. We'll start there, but you know, it's professional, as Jason Simon would say.
Oh, no.
Way professional.
You know what I think is really exciting? I think what's exciting now is what's keeping me up at night is no longer everything all the vendors are doing wrong, and it's finally all the stuff that they're doing right. It's like all of the shouting from the rooftop and all of the private conversations that, you know, I know you and I have had, you know, over drinks at conferences with product people and, you know, all the stuff that we've been working on for the last 2 or 3 years is actually finally hitting people's pipelines, and it's getting launched and it's getting released, and it's amazing to watch because it's going to completely change the future of how we recruit and manage talent. And so now what keeps me up is how do we get the adoption to that next level, and how do we really evolve this so that what is coming out and the stuff that we've worked so hard to do doesn't kind of fall to the side or take another 4 or 5 years to get picked up.
Nice. Let's bring the audience into, you know, what used to be vision 5 years ago and now is closer, if not at reality. What do you think, if you were to put on your visionary hat, what do you think the future of recruitment technology looks like?
Well, if we step back 5 years ago, you know, the conversations we were having were, hey, one day maybe we'll be able to use video, and wouldn't one day it be great if we use some sort of CRM technology and we were able to manage our own pipelines and talent pools, and everything wasn't just about the applicant tracking system. And, you know, fast forward to today, and that's not even the conversation anymore. The conversation has shifted to that applicant tracking system really has just become a hub, and all of these other products are how we actually recruit and hire now. The whole conversation has shifted, and it's really all about these other products and solutions. And so now the next evolution that we're going to see in the next 3 to 5 years coming out is the combination of all of these, you know, auxiliary or supplementary solutions into one amazing pre-ATS type of monster tool, not the brands, but the, you know, theory, that really just pulls everything in together. So a combination of CRM and video and talent communities and job distribution and big data, analytics. So everything is in that one place. And it's not, you know, kind of piecing together all of these other solutions anymore.
You know, there's been a lot of products that have come to market or companies that have, quote-unquote, companies that have come to market in the last, let's just say, 5 years or so. They're kind of on the outside. They look like features. You know, when you look at them, it's like, you know, it looks like you're a spoke, not necessarily a wheel. What's your kind of your best take on consolidation and acquisitions over the next couple of years?
I think there has had to be a lot of spokes versus wheels that have come through because none of the big guys had enough foresight, to be very honest, to build out the products that users actually wanted. They were so focused on just rebuilding and fixing that wheel that they forgot about all of the components and spokes. And so we've seen a lot of really innovative startups, and we've seen a lot of interesting products pop up that literally I heard, you know, big guys and big analysts say, well, that's not even possible. Nobody's going to buy that. And now they are, you know, selling for a lot of money. The consolidation is going to be a lot of these spokes coming together to create an entirely new wheel that complements the ETF wheel and complements the talent management wheel and complements these other, what I would consider more core solutions that, quite honestly, they're not designed to get the job done. They're designed to track how we do the job.
Nice. What's your take on, obviously, you probably, it should be a drinking game every time someone mentions big data, so everyone takes a drink. But the
big
specific
data.
Yeah, big data. There goes another shot. Or a dolphin died, one or the other. Anywho, the relationship between big data and recruiting or talent acquisition, what's that relationship look like for you now, and what do you think it looks like in the future for folks?
Right now, the conversation between big data and recruitment really is much more theoretical. It's just, you know, we're talking about big data, but we don't even really have it at our fingertips yet. There are a couple of products coming out that are starting to harness it, or they're harnessing it in a segment, which I call almost like mini data. And so we're getting far more data than we ever possibly dreamed. The challenge is that most of the products that I have seen to date have not created a user interface that is simple enough for an average HR professional or an average recruiter to function in to make it make sense. When we get to that point in the next 12, 18, 24 months where that UI has shifted and the ability to really harness the data and understand it in a way that we don't even understand is possible, as a practitioner, it doesn't understand it's possible, then we're going to see a completely flip on its head of what this can do. I think it is the most exciting thing, and some of the products and the usage of big data that I'm seeing that's kind of starting to trickle in, not just in the talent acquisition, but talent management and overall business planning in general, is one, kind of scary, but two, unbelievably amazing. I mean, it's similar to when we were first seeing SaaS ETF come into play and become affordable and usable by all companies. So it reminds me a lot of like 2003, 2005 timeframe is the excitement level I have over this.
Nice.
Which I'm a huge, so that says a lot.
Nice. So I do want to kind of ask a second question on data. Can you envision a world where candidates own their data and companies pay to access their data and or for their ability to apply? So let's say you're a nurse or you're a software engineer and you've tightly controlled your own data, et cetera. Can you envision a world mm-hmm. where we pay people to either apply or to access their data?
No. And the reality is we have no privacy any longer. We've completely lost all privacy with the Internet. And so regardless of how tightly controlled you think your data is, it really isn't. It's accessible, it's out there, and it's easy to get. And, you know, there's some plays going on right now about where people can control profiles a little bit more and you pay to access the profiles. But the reality is that all of that information is out there. And if we look at some of the products that are coming out that are doing personal aggregation of data, so, you know, the Dice Open Web, the Talent Bin, and Flows, that whole group of products that are taking everything that's available in the open access areas, combining them to create these monster, massive profiles together, there's no way, unless somebody goes completely off the grid, they'll ever be able to control that.
So like
Ted
Kaczynski.
I guess.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's like wah wah. Sorry.
No.
we'll have your coffee and pretend you have some sense of privacy now.
Yeah. There you go. Anyhow, so Facebook apps. There was an era where it was all the rage for recruiting and HR, and it looked like there was a lot of energy, a billion people to have access to.
That was cute.
We patted that on the head. What does that look like in terms of interacting with Facebook from a recruiting and or HR perspective in the future?
You know, again, when I work with vendors and we're looking at building brands and building market strategy and everything, and we work with companies to build their market strategy around collecting talent, you know, the reality is you get a bunch of these social media experts that say, oh, you want all the likes, you want people to follow you and like you, when the reality is if you don't, you want to be able to collect their data. And so 1,000 likes on Facebook means nothing if you only have 5 of them in your talent community or your CRM system. And so what the role of Facebook should be is to take and gather people into where you can actually manage them. There's no reason Facebook should manage that relationship, because the second they cut their APIs out, which will happen, you're going to lose access to all of these people and all of this time and effort and everything you've spent building up. So, you know, where does Facebook play in the whole thing? Obviously, Facebook is going to stick around. The reality is, you know, again, I'm Midwest, you know, just talking to people. I'm hearing more and more professional age, you know, 25 to 45-year-old people dropping off Facebook altogether. And they're cutting their profiles. They have lost interest in it. So, you know, where is Facebook really going to play in the future? You know, it's not something I would bet my strategy on.
Nice.
For a vendor or a company.
What's your, and, you know, these things change like day to day, but what's your favorite social network from a recruiting perspective?
Oh, God. You're just trying to get me in trouble. You know what? I think that it really depends on the industry you're recruiting in and the level of employee that you're recruiting. I mean, there are some fantastic social networks that are designed just for tech, and there are some fantastic networks that are designed just for that professional level or the entry level or the college, you know, the alumni network. You know, there's a lot of these, and I think the one thing I wouldn't say, I mean, obviously LinkedIn is the one we always hear about. Everyone always talks about LinkedIn. But when you actually start looking at the ROI from LinkedIn is really, really expensive. It's a very expensive product. And for companies that aren't managing their big data very well and looking at analytics and looking, you know, they may not even be comparing it to where the money should be spent as a resource that's working better for them. So, you know, I hate giving out, like, use this social network, because the reality is what works for one company and one recruiter is going to be vastly different for another one. Is that my cop-out answer?
Yeah, that sounded good. That was nice, sir. let's go. I want to kind of pivot a little bit. And what are some of the technologies that you feel are just dead? I mean, literally, where people still talk about them a little bit, but they've kind of just been shoved to the side and will probably not come from the ashes.
Well, I'm going to get a lot of emails on this, but I am for sure those Facebook apps, unless they are part of a larger product strategy, they're just not something long-term that's going to remain very, very viable. I also think that... the telephone interview where you, like, record your interview over the phone, I think those are just getting kind of phased out with the video interview. I don't see a big resurgence of that technology coming through. And a lot of the other products that was purely based on just process automation, like we're just taking your form, putting it online, and that's it, I think buyers are going to be looking for more than that. You know, we're looking for kind of that next level and that next step. Did I miss one? Wait, do you have a couple maybe that I should give a yes or no on?
No, that's okay. No, and I think, I would totally, I mean, I would absolutely agree. I think you've got some hooks currently that are going to get broken and some triggers people build some things on that I think is going to cascade into a little bit of a 911 effect of, you know, we knew this could happen, but we didn't really think it would happen. And I think there's, you know, that's going to be an interesting, especially with, you know, the API and kind of the way we're going with the cloud is going to, I think the cascading effect, I mean, Amazon, every time their cloud kind of starts to break down because so much of, other infrastructure is based on that, whenever there's a hiccup, it's just, it's a ripple effect that is just ridiculous. So it'll be interesting.
And I think there's a lot of products that are big products and big industry lines now that will not exist in 5 years, but not because the products aren't going to be around. It's just that they're going to be absorbed into a larger solution. And so I won't even go into what those are because it'll get twisted and be like, oh, Sarah thinks that such and such won't exist in 5 years. But the reality is I think a lot of these that we were calling spokes earlier, they will not have a category of their own within 5 years. All the products will just be gone and just absorbed into something else.
Yeah, solid futuristic prediction there. So let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive-Thru HR, we're on with Sarah White. And so to kind of keep down that same stream of thought, how can these vendors that are going to go away in 5 years and not exist, what can they do differently? They don't want to exist.
They're going to make a killing. They're all going to get sold, absorbed, acquired. Most of them are going into this knowing that it's a 3 to 5 year acquisition plan. But they also know that nobody else is going to build the products that people actually want to use. And so it's such a win-win for them. And quite honestly, for the larger vendors, it's a win-win on that side as well, because they're going to have all of these products done and acquirable much faster than their own internal development teams could ever even imagine doing it. I mean, the speed at which a startup can go from concept to development to launch to having clients is, 5 to 10 times faster than any of the big guys could ever even imagine.
Nice.
So,
why do they always why do they always have to be guys?
Is the big guy
that?
Yeah, that's not true. Because I'm
all right.
It.
All right.
I feel like women should be in their place in the kitchen, right? Clearly.
No. You're breaking up on me. I can't hear anything that you're saying. My wife listens to these calls. Are you kidding me? All right, let me ask you a question about career pages on company websites. You've seen the evolution of these things.
Yeah.
Do we overrate them? What's the future of, you have a company page, you have the career section within that. What do you see that looking like in a couple of years from now?
Well, obviously, this is somewhere that is close to my heart. I've been part of the Candidate Experience Board since day one, first as a judge, then on the board, and now sitting on their council. And so for me, the Candidate Experience really is key. And one of the early components of Candidate Experience really is that careers page. And we're still evolving, right? If you look at most career pages, they're still pretty bad. They're still pretty generic. There's nothing too in depth, there's nothing really genuine about the company. And I think where we're going to see that shift is just companies continuing to actually feel that it's okay to be who they are, right? So instead of projecting this image of what they think the perfect company is, they're just going to start talking about who they are. They're going to share stories about their current employees. They're going to share a video, make it more engaging. The whole concept of the talent community or CRM is going to come more into play. The 45-minute application is just going to be gone. I mean, that's just ridiculous anyway. For most good products, you can apply directly through LinkedIn or a Facebook anyway and just drag your information in. And for a good recruiter, that's all you need to get going and at least get started. Some of the video interviewing products that have started to come through and launch where when you apply, you can automatically submit your interview at the same time, I think will become more and more common as we, you know, we just launched a, or not launched, we just closed a large survey on video interviewing usage, and the increase in usage over the last 3 years has been phenomenal, going from early adopter to really kind of a early stage user phase. And so, you know, that is only going to continue to evolve, which is great, great for candidates and for recruiters.
Nice. In terms of companies, should they have a either stated or implied a candidate bill of rights?
No. And I'm going to get, you know, a lot of the candidate experience people mad at me, but no, they shouldn't. That isn't everybody's culture. You know, having something, a bill of rights, can you ever imagine putting that up at your own company? Unless you are doing it as kind of a, like, tongue-in-cheek, like, it's our bill of rights. You know, not all companies need to do something that formal. What all companies need to do is just treat candidates with respect. If you, you know, the companies that have to do bill of rights a lot of times are ones that have longer processes. They have a longer turnaround time. You don't really see it from the companies that guarantee a response within 24 hours to every single person that applies. So, you know, it's just treating people with respect. It doesn't always have to be, you know, documented and to that degree. What I think is equally as good is just putting expectations like, hey, this is our process. Here's how it works. You want to apply here? You want to work here? Once you apply, we're going to review your resume. Sometimes it takes a couple days. Sometimes it takes 2 weeks. We promise we'll get back to you. That's it. I mean, it doesn't have to be such a formal thing. And I, you know, I think that's one of the questions and comments that I get a lot from people is that they have an expectation that everything has to be so formal and so extreme. And so they get caught up in the formality of something versus just actually doing the implementation of it.
One of my all-time favorite recruiting programs was IKEA's recruiting program where they put the instructions on how to apply for a job at recruiting inside the boxes of all of their stuff. And they wrote it like an instruction guide. So, I mean, it's just,
right.
It was in line with their brand. It was just great,
exactly.
Not just shtick. It was just well executed. Out of all of the programs you've seen and been a part of, quite frankly, what's some of your favorite types of programs?
You know, I think overall my favorite type of program is exactly what you're talking about with IKEA. It's ones that are just true to the organization and true to the brand. You know, I have a laboratory that I've done some work with, which has a very, very boring employment brand. But you know what? It's a really boring place to work. It's all scientists and they're lab people. But everything they do and the whole process is exactly what you would expect. And so the people come in, know exactly what to expect. It isn't, you know, so I love that. They're not trying to be anything that they aren't. Then, you know, on the flip side, there's a consumer product company that I had done some work with who built a brand that was kind of like wild and crazy, and it's like videos, and we're going to send you random stuff in the mail if we're selecting you. And I mean, it was so over the top, it was obnoxious, but that was how that company was, right? The whole company. You go to work there, nothing is, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, nothing is a 9 or 10. Everything's a 45. You know, nothing is just average or good enough. Everything is to the extreme. And so, you know, without getting like, hey, this one is my favorite company, like anything that is well done and done to brand. And I'm going to, here's the drinking game shot for everybody again. Anything that is authentic to the organization is, you know, I absolutely love.
Nice.
It's
and
so
pre-show.
Few people do it.
No, go ahead.
So few companies actually are authentic to their brand.
Yes. In pre-show, we were talking about Duck Dynasty. And my,
yes.
You know, my personal take is that they are indeed rednecks, but they amp up their redneck-ish behaviors for TV and thus are not really all that authentic. If you really want authentic, you know, rednecks, don't have a camera. And really, you can get anywhere in America and you can find rednecks. And really, there's a question in there. And the question is, how do you, Sarah, how do you manage authenticity?
You know, I think that everybody has, and I do think you're authentic. I think that's what, if you give rednecks a couple $1 million and let them go and say, hey, we're going to videotape anything crazy you want to do. Absolutely. I'm just thinking back, you know, I grew up in the woods in North Idaho, right? Like, I have seen those people. So, you know, I think they are authentic. But how do I manage authenticity? You know, I think there's different levels of authenticity for every situation. I think every person has that. You know, how I am around, like, my tight group of friends is very different than how I am around work colleagues and how I am around, you know, new clients. And, you know, it's balancing and being true to who you are and just having your core values. And, you know, and what happens is when you are authentic is when people assume you aren't, when you're doing it on a personal level. Because nobody is exactly the same all the time. And anyone you see in social media or out there that is consistent and always the same, those are probably the least authentic people you'll run across.
Hey, you know what?
Everyone has amazing days. So if everybody just has, like, meh days, how authentic is that? Or their life is kind of boring.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, and I can definitely attest to probably the most authentic person that I know in general, as far as, like, there's one speed and you can see it coming a mile away, is my delightful and inspiring co-host, William Fincub. So, I mean, if you don't, you know, if you can't, you know, see the authenticity coming a mile away, then I don't know what exactly you're looking at, but it's always consistent, and I'm always pretty impressed that
right.
It is what it is, and I like that,
yep.
And it's, so, but that's not, like, it's your point. You know, I think everybody has a core, and then you kind of pivot around that depending on,
yep.
You know, what hat you put on, and, you know, I can appreciate that. It's not everyone listening. It's not, there's no value judgment. It's not right, wrong,
no.
Different.
No.
It's your deal. It's your deal. Look in the mirror, and if you're good with it, then
yep.
Knock yourself out, so. So, Sarah, where are you going to be at? Tell us a little bit of the schedule for the upcoming months. We got about 2 minutes
sure.
And 21
no
seconds left.
I am at the Avature User Conference today, hearing about the Avature CRM system. Next week, I am at Influence HR, as well as I'm going to be talking about talent communities, talent pipelines, and whether or not they're actually going to exist in 5 years at the Recruiting Innovation Summit. Then I'm going to actually spend a couple weeks at home, go figure, amazing, before heading to SHRM and going to be doing some work in the Bloggers Lounge and setting up some sessions there. And then flying to Amsterdam for the Global iRecruit Conference, where I will be presenting the 2013 trends of talent acquisition and a look at the futures of technology within recruitment. And then taking the summer off.
Nice.
Not really, but it sounds
good.
It sounds like I should.
Hey, well, that's perfect. So, well, good. I got a couple things, everybody. Real quick, make sure to follow the hashtag OKHR. Nisha, William, and I are going to be at the Oklahoma State HR Conference. Follow the blog. You can follow all of us and see what's going on. Conversation up in Norman, Oklahoma for the next couple days. Check that out. And, Sarah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. This might have been the most serious we've ever had this.
We had some stuff to cover. We got some lives to change. We got an industry to mold. I know. Good stuff. So we'll get you back on here later in the year. And, folks, guess what? For a little bit of a treat, we are going to roll out with my favorite, a little bit of the two-pack.